as remote viewers, a simple thing for people who have been trained using Cytek's training modules, the home training course, to do would be to take a specific incident, not the whole topic, but a specific incident, one incident of dolphins beaching themselves or whales beaching themselves, and remote view the cause of that. And see where that takes them. Where would the pattern of information be? Would it be inside the body of the animal, or would unconscious, the collective unconscious, take them to the water itself, where they would sketch and draw microorganisms, those kinds of things? Or would it be electromagnetic, perhaps acoustic? Maybe the U.S. Navy hypothetically is testing a device that is acoustically very powerful and damaged the hearing of the animals. Who knows? But we would know as remote viewers quite easily.
Again, on my website, we have a very, very interesting picture. I don't know if you heard it the other night. Peter Davenport reported to us and supplied us with some photographs. Apparently, the U.S. Air Force, I say again, the Air Force, retrieved some pilot whales that had beached themselves, kept the pilot whales for about 13 months, Ed, supposedly in some way rehabilitating them. And then we have actual photographs of Black Hawk helicopters dumping these pilot whales into the ocean about 150 miles off the coast of Florida. Now, I was in the military, just an enlisted guy, but I know enough to know that the U.S. military does nothing like that out of the goodness of their heart. Any thoughts on why the U.S. military might?
No, there are no operational funds for anything like that, unless it would be a Navy project and the Navy paid the Air Force to drop them. The Navy trains navies. I won't mention all of them, but navies can train dolphins to do retrieval operations where a diver's life may be threatened. Let me give you an example. If a nuclear weapon fell off an aircraft, just fell off the pylon.
It's happened, actually.
Yes, it has happened before. There was a tragic case where a couple of Navy divers, and because there were no trained dolphins in those days, and I won't go into specifics, had to actually go down and retrieve this weapon, and it had a cracked case. So when the diver got close, there was the sarin cov radiation, the blue glow. But he had a job to do, as we all did in the military, and he did it, and a couple of days later was dead because the case was cracked on the weapon, and he exposed himself to very high levels of radiation. Now dolphins can be trained to do things like this, to hook a weapon and hook a cable to a weapon so that we don't lose a human life. Mm. The dolphin will die, of course.
Well, yes, of course. Dolphins have large brains, actually, I think, larger than human beings. I don't know how much of that brain they use, but I always thought it would be interesting to ask somebody like yourself whether in the course of remote viewing it is possible to get any form of communication or thinking or understanding of the way those mammals think.
Yes, it is. In fact, this is a job that Cytek did in support of a dolphin project. We went into, and I participated in this a great deal. It was one of the one of my favorite projects.
Oh.
We remote viewed a pod of dolphins and off the coast of Florida, specific dolphins that our researchers were working with, in order to improve the communications, man-dolphin communication,
right.
We wanted to discern the way that dolphins were processing information. And so we, as remote viewers, we were in the minds of the dolphins, particularly when they would awaken in the morning, how they would begin to process things. And what we found was that they're extremely visually oriented, and they're extremely perceptive to changes in the water and advice that changes in their environment, even the most minute change. What we did with this team was to suggest that they do the following. They take photographs and put them in a waterproof case of themselves on the boat, drop the photographs under the water so the dolphins can study the photograph. The dolphin would then stick their head above the water, look at the researcher, and then compare that with the flat two-dimensional picture.
Wow.
Then the researchers could start to shift. The researchers could take a picture of, say, let's say, one son or daughter that was not present on the boat,
right,
put that next to the researcher, drop that photograph into the water, then have the dolphin begin to recognize that some of the things on the flat surface were representative of things that were not immediately apparent in the environment. Then begin to teach the dolphin in a pictorial way, photographic way, a language that they could understand. So in the end, a photograph could be dropped down of a thing, a symbol or something that we wanted to communicate to the dolphin, and the dolphin would understand that that idea, the idea represented in the photograph in the waterproof case, was not necessarily representative of the environment right there, that it was at somewhere else.
My God, that implies some sort of deductive reasoning capability.
Yes, as long as you don't push too far. Actually, I don't know that for certain. I don't know how far we can push them. Other things we found out about dolphins is that they do not appear to be that much more intelligent than a very sharp German Shepherd dog. But we didn't go that far with the project. It would be better to actually engage in the communication study and see how far in practice, in the field, in situ, one could go with the project than try to push it.
Well, one has to wonder if you said they were very sensitive to changes in the water, for example, temperature.
No, what I meant was changes in the environment. If even the most minor change happens, let's say a dolphin goes to sleep by a reef.
Okay.
And wakes up and begins to wake up from a dream state and sees that something has been moved in the environment. Let's say a rock was moved in the reef, or a piece of a garbage or a can or something had been moved. The dolphin will immediately recognize that change. Visually, that change, and go investigate the change.
So they're very visual.
Extremely visual, and that's why we suggested to the researchers to use photographs rather than sounds.
That's remarkable. You have been involved in some of the most interesting projects.
I agree.
How can you possibly consider moving away to an island where you will, I guess, continue your work, but you'll sort of be out of the hubbub of what's going on, and now we get down to why you're doing that. Why is Ed Dames considering moving away to an island far, far away?
Predominantly, Art, because that is we're dealing with, as I mentioned in the past, something called Project Starman. Of all the things that we've done as remote viewers, and they've been fascinating beyond belief, I, like you, and many of your listeners, the Art Bell Show, I'm intensely interested in UFOs, in the UFO phenomenon. That is a big challenge to me. We've studied that. We even investigated it as a military team.
Okay, Ed. I'm sure you heard me mention it earlier in the show. I've got some photographs on the website right now, which are simply convincers. They show a UFO, a disc, flying in Mexico City. They show it going behind a major skyscraper and coming out on the other side. This is really, really convincing stuff. Something really is going on. What?
There's a lot that's going on, Art. I'm going to remote view those photos myself. What I'm going to do is to remote take that photo, circle it, make a Xerox of it, circle the photo at the way that we do, and call it a target, and remote view that specific thing. Now, you have to be careful when you call it a thing, by the way. It could be a projection. For instance, it may look like a vehicle, or may look like a flying object, but it may be holographic in nature. It may be a time-space opening that's moving along, and us puny humans will call it a vehicle.
And would you be able to discern that?
Absolutely. Immediately, we'd be able to determine that, hey, wait a minute, this is an opening. This is a hole. It looks to us visually as if it's solid, but it's not. And then when we would go right to the source, what is causing that? Where in time space is the projector or the causal agent or agency that is causing this to move? Why are they doing it? Is there a they? Are we dealing with robots? Are we dealing with humanoids?
How would you know that? In other words,
sketch them.
In other words, would you see it in one short span of time in this physical reality and then see it missing in the next?
No, we use the photograph, that moment in time space, our minds go right to that moment.
Gotcha.
We turn our attention to that moment where we have that one frame, and we use that as a jump off point, as a reference point for all the other associated and connected information, gaining closer and closer target contact, that specific event being a target. And we fill in all the blanks in a very rigorous way that we teach, that's taught on the tapes, and
but
that we used as a military team.
Okay, but then in the next instant, could you look at the next instant in time?
Absolutely.
And see if it was suddenly gone from the physical reality?
Absolutely. We can track to the left using conventional timelines. We can go back in time to the moment prior. Where was it? Where was it prior to just showing up? Where was it when it disappeared?
Wow.
We can go to the left or to the right. As long as we achieve target focus and lock on, we can follow it. Nothing can hide from this technology. We can follow in time. We can follow in space.
Can you then know, for example, the inhabitants of it? Can you know from whence it came? What kind of things can you know about it as you look at it?
Well, traditionally in work like this, we want to know where the controllers are. Are the controllers, if this is a solid object, is the control agency inside? Is it a remotely piloted vehicle? Is it a sentient machine, an intelligent robot? Is it bionic in nature? Is it both machine and a genetic engineered bio device, or is it being controlled from another place in another galaxy, for instance, by technologies that are nominally 100 million years ahead of us? And I use the word technologies loosely, of course. What are we dealing with? Those kind of things. Is it of transcendental nature? Is it a device that's moving in time?
All right. Now, while you haven't done that yet with respect to these Mexico City photographs, and you're going to, obviously you've done that with other photographs in the past. Otherwise, you wouldn't be moving headlong into Project Starman, and I want to talk to you about that when we get back. So stay right there. Major Ed Dames, SciTech's Major Ed Dames, is my guest. He is a remote viewer. And we'll talk a little bit about the origins of remote viewing, when I first heard about it. And then we'll ask him about objects that he has viewed, like the ones on my website right now. I'm telling you, folks, get up there and take a look. The photos are from Mexico City, and I think they are indisputable. We'll be right back.
Cassette tape of this Art Bell Encore presentation is available by calling 1-800-917-4278. Please specify the date you heard this broadcast. That's 1-800-917-4278.
Major Ed Dames. Major Dames, I've got a late-breaking story that I thought you might want to hear. This comes from the UK News. In Britain, entitled Plant Gene Loss Poses Threat to Food Supply. The article appeared in Sunday's edition of the Daily Telegraph. The security of global food supplies is under threat because variety in the world's plant species, notably wheat, rice, and maize, is decreasing rapidly, according to a UN study published yesterday. The global study, the first of its kind, prepared by the Rome-based Food An agricultural organization, gave warning that a large-scale loss of plant genes gives reason for major concern. Does that set off alarm bells?
Well, it isn't anything new among agriculturalists in terms of being alarming. remember that 80% of the foods we eat are wheat, rice, and maize. So that's keep that in mind. If anything were to damage, a pathogen, for instance, were to damage those crops, we would be in a world of hurt.
Interesting you should mention pathogen. Of course, you had said a plant pathogen would separate from hilbop and would enter probably over Africa. There are many people who saw a very large object enter over Greenland and crash into Greenland and is now covered by the snow. Nobody has any idea what it is, and a couple of people faxed and asked if you might have some idea.
No, we have not. We did not remote view that object, but we wondered if it might have been that cylinder that we had described earlier, and so we ran more remote viewing sessions, did more work, and that particular cylinder is still en route to Earth intercept, very much closer, very close indeed. As of the 5th of this month, it was still on an Earth intercept trajectory. And we don't have its exact position in space. That's one thing we can't do as remote viewers. That's very, very difficult, especially when an object may be moving 500,000 miles a day. So, but we do have its expected Earth entry point, and that is over northwest continental Africa, Mauritania. And it will begin to disintegrate there, moving to the southeast. And the impact, from the studies that we have done, the impact is expected along an imaginary line from Eritrea in the north to Swaziland in the south, but center of mass in the Burundi Lake Victoria region, where there will actually be a remnant of the cylinder that we expect to impact and crater, the rest having disintegrated in the atmosphere. This particular cylinder appears to contain, for all intents and purposes, a plant pathogen.
Something that would eventually spread and kill all green-growing things.
We don't know if it's all green-growing things. We know it doesn't affect algae. That's why.
Well, that's right. That's
yes,
right.
It doesn't affect algae, though, that plant life. But it does affect, we know that it affects palm trees, evergreen trees, conifers, palm trees, many shrubs. So we're not sure how it is doing that. If it's going after the nitrogen fixing parts of the plant's roots, or what? We are not sure yet, but we know it is killing. It will kill plants worldwide.
All right. Again, we have these incredible photographs up on the website of Mexico City of this object flying, this saucer flying. They seem indisputable to me. It passes behind a building. It's part of a sequenced video shot. And while you have not yet remote viewed that, you obviously have remote viewed photographs, similar photographs of UFOs in the past. What have you found?
Well, we've been doing this since, I started slipping these kinds of targets to my military team. I was both the operations and training officer for this unit.
Why, how'd you get away with that?
Well, I had to actually do it under the table, Art. This was not part of... I did it because I was training officer, and I used these targets as advanced training targets. So I was fudging. This was not something that the Department of Defense...
I'm sure.
...had any bailiwick. But I can qualify this by saying that there was one target that NORAD sent to us. NORAD's deep space platforms, the ones that are in geosynchronous orbit, that
yes,
monitor and watch in this country's INW indicators and the warnings network. It watches for launches of missiles worldwide.
Yes.
They were picking up what was termed fast walkers, something that was coming in from deep space, passing by the deep space platforms, the monitoring satellites, and go entering the Earth's atmosphere and disappearing. And some of them appeared to be under intelligent control.
Doing like 25,000 miles an hour.
Yes. Yeah. They did not appear to be boloids or meteors, rocks. They appeared to be something else. And one of these photos eventually made it to my unit under the table through a defense science network. And I used this as a target. And what I did was prepare a report for NORAD, and we went back to NORAD, and I said this. I said, okay, we did take a look at this, and these objects are machines, and they're, the reply was, well, are they Russian? I said, no, they're not Russian. In fact, they're not from around here. And the question was, where are they from? Mm-hmm. And I said, they're originating from just below the surface of the planet Mars. And that was all they wanted to hear. Thank you very much, and goodbye.
Really?
Yes, it's outside of a belief system or any requirement that NORAD has to. There's no requirement to defend against Martian invaders. National defense does not include that kind of thing. And it is an answer that they did not want to hear. It was at that juncture, 1985, that I became intensely interested in following up on this. What in the world were these things?
Of course.
And so I began a series of projects, again, under the table. But I did go to my boss, who was the head of science and technology for the Defense Intelligence Agency. He was my senior raider in the military. And I said, look, we have a tool. This remote viewing, at that time it was coordinate remote viewing. It was not as exacting as it is today in SciTech,
right,
but it was still powerful. So we have a tool that for the first time can look at something that has a phenomenon, the UFO phenomenon in this case, that has heretofore been inscrutable and gather some information on it. He was chomping at the bit personally because he was personally interested in this, as I was.
Sure.
But we didn't have the charter to do it. And because we were already on thin ice, since many people in the Defense Department equated what we were doing with the occult, we really had to be careful about pushing our luck.
Well, yeah, listen to this. This fax just came in. Ed, if UFOs or the Mexico City photos are viewable, could you determine their origin? In other words, space aliens, demonic hoax? Have you ever found a thing or event to be demonic in origin?
Not demonic. I've never found anything like that. We found some very odd, interesting things. Because, you know, the universe is teeming with life. But not demonic, no.
All right,
we found vehicles moving in time, devices moving in time from Earth's future back, slipping through windows of time and then moving back. We found lots of hoaxes. For instance, am I allowed to mention the hoaxes on the air?
Absolutely.
Billy Meyer, the beam ships that the infamous Billy Meyer beam ships are hoaxes, but the Carlos Diaz plasma ship photos in Mexico,
yes,
are extremely interesting. They are absolutely alien in nature. In fact, they are openings, time space openings that lead back to a world, a gas giant. It's a planet that is not anything like ours. And on this planet, directing this specific, let's call it an opening, sort of an eye in the sky. It's a telescope through time space that looks
right
around down on the ground. Why in the world they picked Carlos Diaz's backyard, I don't know. But these entities are. Do you know what a newt is?
No, I don't.
It's like a salamander, but it swims in the water.
Oh, yes.
Okay, picture a newt. We can sketch them about 3.5-4 feet high, fairly thin, that stands upright and looks very similar to a newt, a slippery skin, but in this case, highly intelligent, advanced being. That is the thing that peoples that world that sends this particular phenomenon, Carlos Diaz's way. Very, very, very interesting.
Wow. There was a pronouncement from NASA back on the 9th of this month that all funding for any off-planet manned activity going to either the moon or Mars was henceforth canceled. Remarkable thing to say. I mean, here we have the Mars rock with possible life. We've got the water on the moon and we've got every prospect for going forth in space, and they said everything beyond low Earth orbit is hereby canceled. Well, a day or two went by, and Dan Golden reversed that without giving any specifics of missions that we might make. And I've heard from a number of people that even the space platform, the international one, may be in danger of being canceled. What the hell's going on?
I don't know, Art. I'm not sure what's going on in terms of NASA.
In other words, have we been told by somebody or in some way to stay here?
In a certain way, yes. The project that SciTech did for the Russians in 1989, the Russian government wanted to know what happened to their Phobos 2 spacecraft, the second in a series of spacecraft that went to Mars.
Correct.
We did that, and we found, as I've reported so often, that that spacecraft was actually intercepted by robotic vehicles and decommissioned. Inadvertently, it appeared, but we're not sure at this juncture. It was taken out. The same thing happened to America's Mariner probe.
Oh, well, we've got a new one up there now, which has entered Mars orbit, is aerobraking. And Tom Van Flandren, who's responsible, I guess, for a lot of the imaging they're going to do, has been warning people that if they're able to image, in his opinion, the Cydonia region once again, there is going to be proof positive, in his opinion, that these objects are not natural objects. The phase on Mars, the various things that are around the face, that these are not natural, and that it is going to destroy a lot of paradigms and cause a lot of trouble.
Let me tell you what SciTech stands by. There is in the Cydonia region, there is one specific feature that we have remote viewed time and time again. We were so astounded by it. And again, don't forget that these are very interesting to us. We get tired of the military operations and who killed whom and where's the dead body type of thing. So
sure.
Why not? This is a real adventure, and we love this work. I've been doing it since 1985. A specific feature that in the open literature is termed the tetrahedron is a pyramidal feature that's perched on the lip of a large crater. We absolutely stand by SciTech's data that is an artificial, man-made feature. That is not a natural feature. The rest of the things in Cydonia crater.
Do you really intend to say man-made?
Yes, it was. There was a race on Mars that we've done a lot of work looking back in time, through time, and putting it together using the same technologies that we use to support military operations. We can move back in time and look at that. There was a race there that built that structure, yes.
A race of earlier man, or a race of other beings, is what I'm asking?
They were very much humanoid, very much. The gases that they breathed were different. They were not too unlike us in their features. I call them Phoenician mestizo. They had sort of olive skin and sort of an Andean homotype of a body, and they their race disappeared in a very catastrophic event.
It's remarkable. Is there now life on or in Mars?
There is something that I don't want to talk about because it's a little bit too far out, even for this venue. But there are robots there. There are robots that are for all intents and purposes sentient, and they belong to another race that is not necessarily on Mars. They're there. They're running operations.
Huh. Is that what we somehow are not going to be allowed to connect with? Is that why we are in effect being restricted?
Yes. There are wardens.
Wardens.
Mm-hmm.
Good Lord.
Now I say that, But there's something else that's going on here, and I wanted to talk. You asked about Project Starman.
That's right.
You and I have both seen the movie Contact with Jodie Foster.
We sure have.
Years ago, my team wondered about how to actually establish contact. And we came to the conclusion about 4 years ago that the best way to actually establish contact, and this is something that I wanted to do, this is something that I wanted to do before I died, because it was an adventure. It's an adventure that I want, and many other people do too, I'm sure. Why try to second guess what the requirements for contact would be? In the movie Contact, a very interesting thing happened, and a federation that universe is teeming with life at various stages of evolution. A federation communicated a particular technology. Think of standardized technology or military specifications that were required to transport someone somewhere for contact.
To build the machine.
That's right. Several years before that movie came out, what SciTech did was began a series of remote viewing sessions on a project that we called Project Starman. And what we did was take a look at this federation that exists out there. There are several federations, but the one in this neck of the woods, which makes up several galaxies. What we did was look at what we call the Galactic Federation. I coined this term in 1985 and began to use the military team against it. I think Jim Mars has picked up on this in several of his books.
Indeed.
I began looking at that, and what I was after is the standard technologies that are used by all races. Think of the United Nations. If I were a native in that came out of a jungle somewhere on the world, Borneo or whatever, and my nation was admitted to the United Nations, I would wear a suit and a tie, or at least learn how to use the devices that were present in the UN, the microphones and other things, to be able to standardize the way that I behaved so that I could communicate with others at the UN.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So what we did was to remote view the contact protocols that are used for an initial entry into a federation. And that is why we're heading for Polynesia, because there's something, there's both a place and a set of conditions that we must partake of, that we've got to engage in order to initiate this contact that we know will happen.
All right, in the movie Contact, they did it by receiving a radio, actually, eventually, albeit a television signal from elsewhere, mm-hmm. from Vega, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in Project Starman, you are contemplating the use of laser technology, aren't you?
To a certain degree.
All right. Ed, hold on. We'll be right back to you from the high desert, which will answer. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Hello,
on his way to Polynesia, where you will set up what, Ed?
Actually, I've been coming and going from Polynesia, Art. I'm in L.A. right now. I disappear for about a month at a time.
So you're in transition.
Yeah, we've been moving back and forth. It isn't so much what we are setting up as where we are going and what is there, what has been already actually pre-positioned. It's something that has been set up, but not by us. It's been there for a long time, and it's operating that particular thing that allows for contact. And that was a fantastic discovery, and it's the end. It's really it caps my life's work. It's a capstone project for our company, and it's a real lifetime adventure. So you can see why we're there.
In the movie Contact, it was done by, I'm trying to recall now, it seems to me up in the high gigahertz range they began to receive a signal. In what manner do you anticipate contact to be made with your project?
There is a thing, there is I'll call it a thing for all intents and purposes, that's already in place and essentially has been waiting for someone to find it. And it evidently could only be found through these kinds of methods, because I can't see how anybody could ever have found it. I mean, it would be beyond me to imagine. It is in such an out-of-the-way place and disguised and hidden so well. It is, for all intents and purposes, something like a Stargate. Only instead of us going that way, it allows for something to come down once it's initiated. I don't want to say much more about it, but I will say that if people are really interested in this, if they learn remote viewing, they can do the same thing that we did. They can remote view myself or that location, and they'll know what we're doing.
All right. I want to tell everybody in the audience that not only do I have Module 1, but I now have Module 2 from Ed Dames and SciTech, which begins to get into the real meat of how to remote view. Now, I probably was one of the first to get Module 2. A number of people are very curious, Ed. Is Module 2 on the way now, shipping now, or what's going on?
It's been shipping for a week, and I think that we have already fulfilled about 80% of the prior orders. So within the next several days, all orders will be filled. That's a four-tape set. It's about 8 hours of instruction, and it's a real commitment. Module 1 and 2 are five tapes. A lot to learn, but extremely. It's Pandora's box. God help us. I don't know what we've let out of the bag, but it's a very powerful tool. It took many years to develop this and put it into the form where an individual can learn it. And someone with an above-average IQ, it will require about 4 months working an hour a day, every other day, at least, to master these techniques, to do what SciTech does.
All right. Dick from Hawaii asks the following. Why did other viewers talk of going to Target and actually being there while SciTech TRV teaches getting impressions on a piece of paper?
Actually being there. Is this like astral travel or something like that? Is that what...
Well, I think he's saying that others talk of actually going to the Target as in being there versus a TRV, which teaches you to collect impressions. Is there a delineation there?
I think that what the individual is referring to is something like astral travel, where part of oneself is really somewhere else. Our techniques we're downloading patterns of information. Think of all things in the universe existing as a pattern, and in terms of a field. Right now there are radio waves going through us all the time, as you know, many different frequencies. If one has a radio receiver, that's not good enough. You have to tune in to a specific frequency, and you have to be able to download that, demodulate it, and tune into a specific frequency and a signal. That's what we do. We use our minds to tune into specific patterns. And then we use a pen, plain white paper, and in about an hour, we gain very close contact with the target and objectify data in terms of words, sketches, and that's all that we do. We're not going anywhere at all. We're just plugging into this field.
How many sessions were done and how much analysis to verify the plant pathogen scenario?
About 30 remote viewing sessions by SciTech remote viewers themselves. And analysis, actually we spent about 8 months. We were so nonplussed at what we were getting, because this was supposed to be just a comet, ice, rock.
Sure.
That's it, gas. And time after time after time, remote viewers using this as a training target were sketching a man-made object, an artificial object, a cylindrical object that was not rock. And that's why we turned so much attention to it for such a long period of time.
When we did the last show, Ed, you talked about a problem with the sun. You talked about a sort of a warning shot across the bow of an eruption on the sun. That would then be followed by another really big shot in the springtime. We did have some sun activity just within days, actually, of when you predicted it, and we've not had anything since. Can you tell us where we stand?
Well, the the kill shot that SciTech is describing, a very lethal event, we think the best that we can do, and as remote viewers, is in 1999. We're seeing spring of 99. A precursor that we were talking about.
Right.
We were saying that something may happen as early as December, and that was a coronal mass ejection in December.
Yes, there was.
Although it was in the class of events, solar events, it was relatively minor. It did not really result in a lot of damage to spacecraft electronics or anything on the ground. But nevertheless, it's that kind of event that we're saying will be magnified many, many times. Not necessarily a coronal mass ejection, possibly something else solar in nature, but originating in Earth's sun, that in 99 will be extremely destructive and deadly to life on Earth. And we're preparing. I mean, I'm not going to take any chances. We will be underground.
And what do you expect from Project Starman? In other words, you expect contact, and then what?
I don't know. I don't know, Art. There are so many unknowns and so many things that we're perceiving and associated with that particular event in the future, where we perceive ourselves there, but we don't know what's going on. It's beyond our ken. We don't have the software to discern what is happening. It's too difficult.
Right.
We don't have the thesaurus or the experiential database to be able to put this into ideas.
Fair enough. I know it's very new.
Mm-hmm.
Ed, there was a pretty wild story going around not long ago that some people, workers at Cheyenne Mountain, you know where that is?
Yes.
Had come upon some information that caused them to be so concerned that they took their families and left the country. Do you know anything about that?
No. No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't. I mean, that is essentially most of the workers in Cheyenne Mountain are military, and that's
right.
That's desertion.
Yeah. Well, yes, it is. No question about it. We have, though, and you do know something, don't you, about the incident that they talked about on 60 Minutes the other night?
There have been several incidents like that, and there have been a number of incidents where this country has been very, very close to war, closer than the public knows. And that happens. It's a very scary place, this planet. And the Cold War was scary, and things are scarier now.
Are we going to make it through it? I remember the last program you said finally you understood the nature of the discontinuity that you saw.
That was the solar event that we're perceiving in the future that annihilates a lot of life on Earth, yes.
In 1999.
We think that this event, this deadly event that we have been perceiving, comes in the best that we can do as remote viewers, because time is a little bit slippery. We can remote view something that's next or present. Those two search terms, in terms of an encyclopedic search, the next type of event or present location. The idea of next, the idea of present, as temporal search terms, work every time.
Yeah, the analogy you've used in the past is like going up to Yahoo on the internet and it giving you the most likely hits.
Yeah, but in terms of temporal, of time, because mind is outside of space and time, so we're not sure where we are in space and time, in time particularly, where are we on a timeline, but we do know that when we use the search term next, that the next type of event, for instance, the next volcanic eruption in North America,
yes,
that limits the geographical area to North America. And we know that when we perceive, let's say, a Mammoth Mountain blowing its top, that is the next volcanic eruption. That's what we're going. We don't know when the next one is. There, we're in a ballpark area, and it's very difficult to discern the when of the next.
I understand. All right, let's move to some calls. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Yes, sir. Oh, I can't believe I got through.
Yes, you have.
Major Dames, and this is Rich in Oklahoma. And being from Oklahoma, I'm definitely interested in what happened in Oklahoma City a couple of years ago. I lost a family member there, and I want to know if he's done any remote viewing and if he could let us know anything about what really happened that day.
For example, was there a John Doe number two? That's a good one.
We have not remote viewed that. We haven't looked for another individual. That would actually that is not a difficult thing to do, but we haven't done it because we've had so much other work.
That is not the kind of work that you like to do anymore, is it? Do you get worn down by that kind of work?
Yes, we do. Over the years, we're worn down. The Unabomber, on and on and on. The KL 007 bombers,
800.
Yeah, over and over again. Now we that does get old, and in fact, when people learn this, when members of the public learn this from our tapes, let them do it. It's their turn. Put the monkey on someone else's back.
That's the real drudgery work of remote viewing.
It isn't drudge so much as it gets old. It's the same thing over and over again. Another one that's even more difficult to do is missing children. Almost always missing children are out there. They're street urchins or they're with a family member. But it's the ones where a child has been killed or sometimes tortured that are very difficult to work. That leaves an indelible impression on you and starts to weigh you down every time you do it. So
I'm sure of it, Ed. I'm sure of it.
You can see why we like the UFO ET. To work. That leaves an indelible impression on you and starts to weigh you down every time you do it. So
I'm sure of it, Ed. I'm sure of it.
You can see why we like the UFO ET stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I was a 911 dispatcher, and I used to go home in the morning after a night of life-threatening situations and not be able to sleep, not be able to eat, not be able to function properly, and generally fighting with everybody around me just because of the weight of what had happened to me during the night. So I can imagine actually seeing these events would just be horrific. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Well, hi, Art. Calling from Las Vegas on your new station.
105.1.
Yes, sir.
Hot Talk 105.1. Yes, sir.
I have a question for Major Dames, if I could, please.
Shoot.
Major Dames, you were talking about your remote viewing about the pestilence coming through the Earth here in the foreseeable future.
I mean, to the Earth, yes.
Is some of this pestilence induced by people on Earth itself?
In other words, environmental concerns, do they feed into what's going to happen?
No, I don't think that's what the caller exactly meant. I think he meant, as a result of existing conditions here rather than being fostered by other conditions that are prevailing?
Okay.
As close as we can discern, ideas associated with this cylinder are it is some type of sucker for Earth, some type of a vaccine to help Earth fight off something like a disease.
A vaccine?
Sort of. An antidote for what is killing things at the surface of the Earth. Think of the Earth as having a skin, a body with a skin,
yes.
The skin being infected with a disease or a pathogen,
yes.
And not having enough internal defenses to fight it, an immune system to ward it off and needing help from a doctor. This is the doctor sending a pill.
Pill.
Mm-hmm.
What about our, you mentioned our immune systems. I've had a lot of people, Dr. Lorraine Day, many, many people recently talking about our immune systems and suggesting that generally we are depleting them at an unimaginable rate, and that disease is indeed, I don't know if I can think of it as a vaccine, Ed, but disease is going to get us.
It is the single most fearsome thing that my company has discerned, disease. Right now, we're at a point. We're not looking at the cause so much as the event itself. The event is so huge. We're in the terms of a natural curve, let's say an E curve, a logarithmic curve.
Right.
We're right above the dog leg. We're right at a point in this E curve where disease is ready to take off and accelerate. And I mean, bam, there it goes.
Now, is that a result of our diminished immune systems? If that were not the case, this disease would not be able to get a foothold, would it?
That is not what we're seeing. What we're seeing are sets, ensembles of diseases, viral and bacterial predominantly, it's not because of our immune systems becoming more vulnerable. It's because organisms, these microbes, are becoming so virulent so rapidly. And when they do, the Center for Disease Control and other centers akin to that will not be able to develop vaccines, antidotes, antibiotics in the case of bacterial infections fast enough to be able to keep up with these diseases. They're going to really kill us off.
Is there any way to know what percentage of the population through all of this is going to survive?
I assume that if we did a lot of remote viewing and some statistical extrapolation, we could know, but we have not done that yet. As remote viewers, we're looking forward in time to the near future, and there are rotting, decaying bodies in countries, and the smell of decay everywhere. The corpses rotting in the street. It's like the Black Plague all over again in many third world countries from diseases, not war.
But it's going to be it's not going to specifically be the Black Plague, but something like it.
We haven't pinpointed the diseases. We have not looked at the specific microbes themselves, although we know there's at least five or six. One very easy target, one thing that SciTech is going to do with our new students on the TAPE course,
yes, sir,
is together we're going to look at, as a practice target, a very easy one. As you might know, the host or the reservoir of the Ebola virus is not known to medical science.
That's right.
And it's a very, very easy target, Art. It's a cinch to do when you're trained in remote viewing. So working with our students.
You're gonna try to find where Ebola's coming
from. Oh, we're not gonna try.
We're gonna show our students how to do this. All right. We're gonna take a break here at the top of the hour. My guest is SciTech's major Ed Dames. Need to plug your videotapes. These are videotapes, a series of videotapes that will actually instruct you, the general public, in how to do what Ed Dames does, how to remote view. Now, there are some people who have said, you know what? Ed Dames is going to take our money and run. I'm never going to see my videotapes. He's going to go to Polynesia and enjoy life on our money, and he's not going to deliver the tapes. Well, you are delivering the tapes, and I would like to give you an opportunity to tell everybody how to get them, and that indeed you are going to fulfill the orders.
Well, most of them have been fulfilled now, Art. The production took a solid year of it was a tremendously
serious
difficult project.
I know that.
Expertly done by award-winning editors and filmers, and it took a lot of work to do this. But they're out now. You've got the full set with all the inserts.
Yes,
and,
I do.
They're very effective. There's no other place where you can get formerly top secret military protocols like this, and there they are,
much
to the chagrin of the Defense Intelligence Agency.
I know. How do people get them?
Okay, they can hit our website at www.t trv-psitech.com. Or they can order them direct. In fact, at the website, there's a link through your site. They can find out more about SciTech. Or they can order the tapes directly in the continental U.S. and Hawaii at 1-800-556-0391.
Okay. 1-800-556-0391.
Or in Alaska and Canada at 1-888-878-0333.
Okay, 1-888-878-0333 for Alaska and Canada.
Right.
Now,
By the way, my vice president, Joni Dueck, wants to take on this dolphin, this recent dolphin pod, the very large pod that you said beached itself. She wants to take on that project as to the cause of that.
So in Venezuela, near, not far from Caracas.
Okay, I'll hunt that down. I've seen it. I'll hunt it down. We'll find out, for you why they beach themselves. And, I want to personally, take on this, Mexico.
Oh boy, do we want to know about both of those. Somebody writes, you apparently have also a, website at Transition 3000.
No, that's not correct. That website is
a German
site with some German students that we trained to put together their own company a couple of years ago.
All right. Somebody writes and asks, they can't read German, but they sure would like to, because apparently there's something on there about the chupacabra, that horrid little creature that sucks blood from animals, and they're wondering what it says in German.
This was a group of German trainees who we trained in technical remote viewing, and many of our commercial trainees, including doctors and surgeons, put together their own commercial operations.
Sure.
They spun off, and you're going to see that we're not accrediting remote viewers, but the tapes are so effective that people are better than the best natural psychics who ever lived. They're consistent on target, and people will form groups, put together companies, and do this work commercially, I'm sure.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Where are you, please?
I'm Harold in Sarasota from WKXY country.
Yes, sir.
Major Dames, I got the tapes, Module 1. I'll be starting my practice remote viewing tomorrow, in fact.
Great.
The reason why I'm calling, three quick questions, and I'll get off the air and I'll listen. I was just checking the web, and some companies say that they can offer technical remote viewing, and some of their students have, you know, won the New York lottery, and they've won in silver trading, and they're using the S&P 500 with accuracy. I want to know if that's true. Also, is there a European version of technical remote viewing? I thought I saw that on the web. And number three, quickly, is what do you see happening in the March and spring of this year in the financial markets?
All right. All financially oriented questions.
Okay. There's no version of technical remote viewing. That is a very evolved form of what was originally coordinate remote viewing, the breakthroughs that we used in 1983 in the military. And as operations officer, I had to massage this into a very consistent tool, and that became technical remote viewing, and SciTech owns that. And then there's nothing like it. No one has anything even close, so there's no version. March and the spring of this year, I think Art, you may remember that last year I said there we're looking at a global economic collapse in 1998.
That's right.
And well, we stand by that. And I said late spring or summer of 1998, what we're looking at is a global economic collapse.
All right. He talked about people using it for things like winning the lottery, commodities trading, silver, that kind of thing.
We can't use it directly to perceive numbers. That is one thing that we can't use technical remote viewing for. We cannot discern alphanumerics. But we can look and we can perceive the trajectory in time of an enterprise, like a company or a corporation, what they're going to do. So it could be used in the stock market. It could also be used to perceive the reason. Well, again, alphanumerics are not a doable thing. I would not try to attempt to use TRV for the lottery, and anybody that says they can do that using a remote viewing tool is just flat out wrong.
Okay.
Otherwise, we would have done it for the National Security Agency, who was very interested in numbers and codes.
Sure they were. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. This is Kathy in Reno.
Yes.
Mr. Dames, it's an honor to speak to you.
Pleasure.
And hello to your wife. I didn't know that you were married, or I should say we didn't. Anyway, Tom and I here have been following your work ever since your first appearance on Art's show, and you sound much more relaxed and happy for some reason. This is nice for us. Okay, you've covered a lot of good information tonight, and I've got just a really off-the-wall question. I'll ask it, and I'll just probably hang up.
Yep.
The device that you found, or that was discovered in Polynesia, was it by chance located in a deep, straight-walled hole? That's embarrassing.
All right.
Yeah, it's very close to something like that.
Now
remember, Art, you're going to have, there's a lot of natural psychics out there. We don't have any monopoly on the truth at SciTech. We only have a monopoly on accuracy. There are many, many people who are naturals. If the naturals learn, if they study the five tapes that we have, that home training course, they become, and they apply the rigor that we require, they're not going to become just good. They're going to become all-stars. So you can't hide anything from this.
I know. And as you look ahead in time, Ed, what do you see the repercussions of that being?
I know it's a world without secrets. But other than that, I think all I can surmise, I don't see anything except that young people will take this as this will be second nature to them.
There is something very different about today's young people. They're calling them the millennium children, and they seem to be very much more spiritual, very much more in tune with something different than my generation, Ed.
I would agree. That's what I'm seeing, too. I know that young people will see this as just another thing, that the children that we've trained this to them is just another, it's another subject at school. It's like, of course people can do this. I can do this. I can perceive, you know, where you're going and what's inside of this missile silo and that. And it's no problem. All they have to do is an hour worth of work.
Yeah. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Yes, sir.
Where are you?
I'm in West Memphis, Arkansas.
Okay.
I've got three questions. The first one, have you done any work on the Kennedy assassination? The second it would be, what is the extent of the government's knowledge of the UFOs, and why are they covering it up? And
third?
It just slipped my mind.
All right, we'll deal with two then. The Kennedy assassination and off-ass question.
Yes, we have taken a look at the Kennedy assassination. I've talked about this before on your show's Art, and I did not believe there was a conspiracy involved until I remote viewed the moment of JFK's death. That's what I, as a remote viewer, was looking at. And some of your listeners who are interested in that event may remember that there was a flechette that penetrated the president's Adam's apple.
Right.
That flechette was fired from inside the car.
Inside the vehicle.
Yes. It was a pneumatic device, and it was fired from inside. When I remote viewed that, it changed my life forever. I couldn't accept it for a while. It took a couple of days to just accept it, because I just did not want to believe, as coming in the Army as a young soldier and serving my country, that someone would be arrogant enough to, someone within the government itself, to kill the President of the United States.
All right, and on UFOs and government knowledge of UFOs, how much, that's a pretty good question, how much do they know?
There's a lot, it's enigmatic and mysterious to the government. There's so many cases of flybys by bases and so much and a lot of interaction mysteriously at weapons depots, actual physical interaction at weapons depots in ways that people do not understand. But most commonly, it's in the form of photography, of satellite photography. I mentioned this before a number of times, that the National Reconnaissance Office and a few other agencies who have their own reconnaissance efforts have enigmatic photos of objects, sometimes glowing objects, sometimes other objects in the visible range, visible spectra, on photographs that are unexplained. We receive many of those as a military team. And because those kinds of photographs, there's two reasons why the government, three reasons why the government doesn't talk about them. Number one is they're unexplained. The government doesn't know what they are. No analyst at any agency in the Department of Defense or another intelligence agency, agencies connected with civilian organizations understand what that is.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're not about, as a responsible government official, one that's not going to say, we don't know. That's first point. Second point is the look angle and what we are looking at with those satellite cameras.
Yes.
That gives away operational data. What we're interested in.
Oh, of course it would. Yes.
So we're not going to show the photograph for that reason. And thirdly, we're not going to show the photograph because it gives away the capability of the platform.
Of
what
course.
It's capable of doing. Can we really see an individual's face and color of eyes? Can we really see through buildings, those kinds of things? Well, if we can, it's going to be known when we show the photograph.
Can we see through buildings, Ed?
Well, I'm just using that as a hypothetical example. You know, our mathematicians can do some very wonderful things. For all you potential young people who are thinking about applied mathematics, I encourage you because using very elegant algorithms, a good mathematician with a good computer can sort through all the chaos in a photograph or an acoustic signal and come up with something that is left over through pattern analysis can be very, very significant.
All right, but whatever these things are, these fast walkers, these things that are traversing our airspace, I don't see how they can be termed not a threat to national security. They are a threat to national security. Anything that comes through our airspace that we can't control or that we don't know what it is, that's got to be a threat to our national security, Ed.
Depends on what you mean by national security. National security in these days and times, in the last 40 years, has generally meant something that can deliver a nuclear weapon onto your soil, Art.
Yes.
Other than that, if you can't explain it, why, it doesn't exist.
Okay. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. This is Scott in Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes, Scott.
Yeah. Major Dames. Art had Sean David Morton on a couple weeks ago on the Clinton scandals, and he doesn't believe that President Clinton's going to make it through the year. I was wondering what your take is on it.
Oh, good question. I bet you have not done any work on the Clinton scandals, or have you?
No, that's not something that we would even be interested in, but
will he make
off the record?
Okay, off the record, yes.
Off the record?
Just whisper into my ear, Ed. No one will hear.
Okay. I don't think he's going to make it to the end of the year.
Not through the end of the year, huh?
Not going to make it through this term. That's all I want to say.
You don't want to say whether that's going to mean Al Gore?
I don't want to say anything else other than our data indicates he's not going to finish his term.
All right, that's more than I expected.
I don't want to go into the reasons why.
That's fine. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Hi, where are you?
I'm in San Diego.
San Diego, all right.
Is this Art Bell?
It is.
Art, I had a dream about a year ago, and I wanted to present it to you and ask Major Dames' opinion on it.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, it's regarding the dolphins and the dolphin and whale thing, but there's also, okay, there was like a great light above the ocean, and the out on the ocean was very rough, and up from the ocean was coming the spirits of dolphins and whales, which were going up into the light. At the same time, there were military planes going up into this light, and they were being turned back and were coming back down toward Earth. One of the planes came around and settled into like a tree. The top was off of it, and there were like 12, 13 men inside, one being Bush, one being Clinton. So I guess my question, this was like a year ago, so I don't really know what my question is. It's just...
All right, so that's your dream. Ed, you say Joni is going to take on as a project. What's going on with the dolphins and the whales?
Oh, well, no, not globally. Just that's not a good thing to do globally, because it could be many different causes. We're going to tackle target that specific incident in Venezuela where that specific pod or group of dolphins beached itself, and look at the reasons why. That's what we're going to do. We have to be very careful about that. So we have chain of custody on our data. So if we have a target that's unequivocal, then our data won't be ambiguous. So we know exactly what we can pin that specific data to that specific pod.
What is a likely result of that sort of targeting? In other words, what kind of information would you likely come back with? That the dolphins beached themselves because of...
Well, I don't know. I can only guess. This is a skill, a very, this technical remote is a skill. We go in there clean. Now, we as individuals could have preconceived notions about why the dolphins might have died. For instance, I think that there's a strong possibility that they could have been, that pollution could have been the cause, possibly petroleum, because of you know, Venezuela has a lot of offshore oil platforms.
It sure does.
But when I put my pen on the paper and I begin these series of protocols, these very rigorous protocols that are taught, that all that goes out the window.
So in other words,
I'm moving too rapidly and collecting information so quickly that my preconceived notions are managed.
Anything otherwise at this point is just a guess.
That's correct.
All right, stay right where you are. My guest is SciTech's Major Ed Dames. The subject is remote viewing. Actually, the subjects range anywhere you want them to go, from the high desert. Major, a couple of facts here. Maybe I'm missing something, but what I hear is, on the one hand, through remote viewing, we learn we have the possibility of contact, or at least preparing for contact with other intelligences. Wonderful, exciting. Makes me want to learn this technique. On the other hand, though, through the precognizance of this same remote viewing, we see that all hell is about to break loose, and that the world could be quickly transformed into a Mad Max scenario. I sure hope we do have a soul, but this is a very mixed bag, and I'd like to know what we have coming, more than a preview of coming attractions. In other words, on the one hand, the great possibility of contact. On the other hand, the deterioration of the human race, Ed.
I know. What can I say, Art? That all that at once, confluence of events.
Okay.
Mine is not the reason why.
I understand. All right, this. Too weird for the Art Bell Show. I guess Ed hasn't been listening to your show lately. Come on, Ed. If anyone can take it, we can. This audience, what's going on underneath Mars?
Something is waking up.
Oh, great.
Something's been waking up for the last 2 years.
All right, we'll let that one hang. Art, please ask the Major if a person's belief system or artistic talents affect their ability to remote view. I have strong beliefs and cannot draw worth a darn.
The belief system does not. The training techniques effectively disallows your belief system from interfering with the target, with the data that's connected with your target. You're taught how to manage information, how to recognize your imagination from the target data. All that's effectively taught. That was one of the big aspects of the breakthrough. Artistically, people, it does not affect suspect I can't draw worth a darn, but I'm a good remote viewer. However, if you do have artistic talents, you can do something that other remote viewers can't. For instance, my vice president can actually sketch the face of a killer or killers or a missing person. I can't do that. I have it in my mind by virtue of going through these protocols.
But you can't.
But I don't have the skill of sketching to
add to
the skill of remote viewing.
I don't either. I draw stick people.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, Major Dames, you've managed to scare everyone. This is from Jackie. Now, how about telling us how to survive it all?
There are sanctuaries, evidently, that places where that will be less affected by the Mad Max scenario. I've talked about these before, too. I've spent an extensive amount of time myself looking at this idea of sanctuaries. We know that areas in... based upon our data, our remote viewing data, and individuals can do this for themselves by using that search term, putting their name down and qualifying it with the idea of a sanctuary. When viewers do this, they sketch places that are consistently in the same areas. Our European students sketch areas around the Liechtenstein, Switzerland region. North Americans, we get places in northern Montana and in eastern British Columbia. There are places in Polynesia near the Hawaiian Islands, some of the Hawaiian Islands. Where else have I seen? I think those are the only ones I know of so far.
What about on a personal basis? I was talking recently to somebody who said, we have progressed people into the future through hypnosis, and we have asked them to write their names. Their response to us was they couldn't write their names because they weren't there.
They're dead. Many people will die, Art. Many people die. That's what scared us so much as remote viewers. As we got into the mid-90s, remote viewing the years ahead, some of us were perceiving many people that weren't there. Now, we thought this was some type of a transcendental event that was happening globally.
Spiritual.
It's transcendental, all right. Our bodies are gone because we die. Many people die.
Okay, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Aaron from Edinburgh, Pennsylvania.
Hi, Aaron.
I had a couple questions for Mr. Dames.
Sure.
First one is, have you ever remote viewed on the subject of reverse speech?
Oh, we'll ask about that here in a second. Okay.
And second one is, what kind of role, if any, in your opinion, does prayer take in this issue? Like, does prayer or personal spiritual betterment or whatever have any influence on remote viewing of the future?
All right. The last first, really good question. Prayer. I remember one time we had you on the air with Father Malachi Martin, and we talked a lot about spiritual things and remote viewing. Ed, how does prayer enter into it?
Well, it acts as a switch if one is well connected. It is very effective. I mentioned often before that I'm a firm believer in angels, because if you remote view them, that idea, you get a plethora of data. Let me answer it this way. I'm almost 50, and I don't know how much longer I'll have to live. I haven't remote viewed my own death. There's certain things I want to do, but one of the search terms that I decided to use one day was the idea of a divine will.
Divine will.
Yeah, sort of a destiny.
Sure.
And I played around with this for a number of years, looking at the idea of, okay, if there's a divine will, how do I match my own will with that? What happens when I remote view divine will and qualify it with me, Ed? And what I come up with is a certain set of conditions, a trajectory for myself, that was one that I was not on. In other words, places that I would be, things that I would be doing that I was describing as a remote viewer that I was not doing at the time. The things that I thought I wanted to do were not matching the remote viewing data I was getting when I was remote viewing that idea, divine will.
Must have been very disturbing for you.
It wasn't disturbing because the data that I was getting was something that I could not have imagined nor would have ever thought about. But it turned out to be something that fulfilled me and made me happier than I could ever have been had I second-guessed what I wanted in life. And some of that dealt with Project Starman, by the way.
All right.
And with teaching remote viewing to children, which I had not thought about.
Children are faster learners, aren't they?
They are. And so I decided, what the heck, you know, kind of an insurance policy, go with a winning team. And I jumped on that ship. And it's been a much more fulfilling life. That's not to say I'm 100% happy, but I believe I'm a lot happier now, a lot happier than I would have been had I stayed on the particular track I was on prior to using remote viewing to attack that particular search term.
Okay. He asked about reverse speech. David John Oates does something called reverse speech, which appears to reveal what a person is really thinking in reverse. And it seems quite clear and hard to dispute. I assume that you've heard it probably on the program. You've heard David.
Yes.
What do you make of it?
I don't really know, Art. We have one of my graduates from the commercial course that I taught is an apprentice of David's, and he would be in a far better position to comment on that. You'll see him, Dr. Jack Johnston, on Module 2. He is the guy, the bearded individual. He is an apprentice of David Oates, and that is a far better person to ask that question.
All right. We're going to have David Oates on Thursday night, Friday morning, and he's going to reverse, among other people, Dr. Zahi Awas, who is the Antiquities Director for Giza. In other words, the Plateau, the Sphinx, the Pyramid, and all the rest of it. And we did a two-hour interview with Dr. Hawass. A very interesting individual. Is there anything you can tell the audience about the Great Pyramid, about the Sphinx, about what may or may not be below the Sphinx? I can only imagine it would be a target you couldn't resist.
Actually, I could resist it personally, but many of my students, my former students, could not. It was a very intriguing project for them. To me, it was kind of boring, but what we found was that there is a chamber under the left paw, I guess you call it.
The Sphinx, yes.
Yes, it's there. It has not been opened, but what was surprising to me is from that chamber is a long, very long dog-legged tunnel that goes to one of the pyramids.
Oh, boy.
It actually proceeds away from that chamber, goes under the desert sand, does a dog leg, and proceeds to one of the pyramids. That was a surprise to me.
It brings a lot of things home for me. Believe me, a lot of us believe that that tunnel is indeed there. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hi, this is Gail in California.
Hi, Gail.
Hi, I have a question for Ed Dames. Hi, Ed Dames. My name's Gail, and I've attempted astral projection, and I've been unsuccessful, and I wanted to know, does remote viewing have anything to do with that, or is there anything you know about it? I should be cautioned not to do it.
All right, that's a really good question. Remote viewing and astral projection have something or another in common, don't they?
No, they have nothing in common. One is mind, and the other one, remote viewing avails itself of mind and body.
Yes.
Astral projection is something totally different.
Yes, but the realms in which you travel...
Negative. That is not true.
That's not true.
That is not true. It is a totally different phenomenon. Astral projection is more akin to one's, let's say, one's essence or perhaps soul actually extruding from the body and displacing.
Yeah, but you remember when you were on with Malachi Martin, you were talking about some of the similarities of this astral plane.
The similarities in the in what we could perceive in terms of another dimension, but one is going there, the other is perceiving it. One would be, for instance, a good analogy would be if we're looking at the astral plane through binoculars from a distance, that would be remote viewing. If we're floating up into it, that would be astral projection.
I've got you. All right. Okay, that makes sense. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hi, my name is Garrick. I'm calling from State College, Pennsylvania.
Yes, sir.
Two questions. One is, do you perceive El Nino as being strictly a natural earth phenomenon? And thing number two, are you dealing with electromagnetic signatures much along the lines of Project Rainbow and Project Phoenix of the Philadelphia experiment?
In terms of remote viewing?
Yes.
Oh, no, absolutely not. Absolutely not. There's no electromagnetics whatsoever.
What is the signature that you're dealing with exactly?
It is a pattern, an information pattern. Think of the universe as patterns of information, just information, a single dimension or a field. All we're doing is turning our attention, our conscious attention, to one of those patterns at a time. And downloading information in terms of linear time, we're hanging a label on that. That's all. The patterns of information are there. We search our memory for labels. We hang a label on the information pattern, go back and forth in a tachistoscopic manner. We grab a pattern, hang a label. Grab a pattern, hang a label. And we fill in it's like collecting pieces of a puzzle and reassembling the pieces. So there's no energetics involved whatsoever.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
In the 60s, it was thought that there was. In fact, I, as a student, assumed that there were energetics involved. But when we realized that we were perceiving matter faster than light could send it to us, we were perceiving data faster than light, that faster than the speed of light, we realized that something may be wrong. If you're familiar with the idea of scalars,
Oh yes.
In electromagnetic theory,
sure.
Think of this as a field or a scalar wave. If you must think of it as a wave, think of it as a scalar wave,
okay.
and not a vector.
All right, El Nino. It really has turned out to be a billion-dollar baby. I mean, it's awful, Ed. The weather is absolutely horrendous. Scientists said that El Nino was a lessening, that there wouldn't be very much impact at all. Now we know that certainly is not true. The storms are lined up like so many soldiers out there, smashing into the West Coast, continuing east, giving everybody $1 billion headaches. Is this just a short-term phenomenon, or is it going to keep getting worse?
The weather will be consistently erratic, as I've mentioned. We have not looked at the El Nino, the causes of El Nino, but we have, as I've mentioned before, used remote viewing to investigate the ozone loss. Okay, in fact, there was a project that we did for the Human Potential Foundation years ago, sponsored by Lawrence Rockefeller, I believe. My memory serves me right, and the project was entitled "A Planetary Ozone Depletion, Projected Consequences and Remedial Technologies," and there were no remedial technologies. What we found in that project was that the ozone annual ebb and flow, was natural, but that human behavior had pushed it over the brink, had pushed it beyond the point where the natural phenomenon could reacquire homeostasis or equilibrium, where it could go back to normal. We pushed it over the brink.
Well, I recall the frogs, the deformities, your predictions of all of that, and much more that all came to pass. Now it's moved way beyond that. Simple-celled organisms in Antarctica beginning to show actual genetic change.
And male organisms worldwide becoming sterile.
That also occurring, yes.
Or hermaphroditic.
Mm-hmm. People can now get Module 1 and Module 2, is that correct?
That's correct.
Is
the product finished? It's been completed.
Is there going to be a Module 3?
There is not. We are the company is becoming overcome by events. Module 3 were a series of professional technical tapes designed for specific areas, law enforcement, military intelligence, medical field, those kind of things.
Professionals.
That's right. What we're doing now is we're teaching professionals free of charge on our website. We're using the website as a platform to teach advanced training for individuals who learn module 1 and 2, who master those, and then we're teaching the specifics on the website.
Okay, a total of how many tapes, Ed?
Five tapes total. 4 months to master them.
All right. Now, the number to get those tapes, 1-800-556-0391, or from Alaska or Hawaii.
Alaska and Canada.
And Canada, huh? Uh-huh. All right, 1-888-878-0333. And you would guess that people would have to spend about how long with those tapes to become proficient?
For someone with an above average IQ or an average IQ, we're talking 3 to 4 months working an hour a day, at least every other day. You can learn it at a slower pace or at a faster pace, but that's the minimum amount of time that one would require to master those modules and solve problems, simple problems.
All right, for somebody who calls now, when would they expect delivery?
Within 10 days. Actually, the Alaska and Canada number is, for people in Alaska and Canada, is a direct number to our office in LA.
Okay, Ed, hold tight. We're at the top of the hour. We'll be right back in some markets. This is Coast to Coast. On my website right now, the most remarkable UFO photographs that I think I've ever seen, they come from Mexico City. Sightings there, the 6th of August, and they show a craft, what appears to be a saucer, passing right through a high-rise building in Mexico City. They're very graphic. They are in sequence from a video that is going to be shown later in the month. This will also be, these photographs will be a target that Major Dames is going to take on. And here's another one for you, Major. We had Dr. Roger Lear and Daryl Sims, who's going to be on the program again tomorrow night, with electron scanning microscope photographs of implants, apparent alien implants, taken out, surgically removed from human beings. And we've got those photographs on the website. I take it they would make a decent target.
They would. They're very specific. They're unequivocal. There's a photograph. That's the target. Describe it and backtrack it through time and look at its origin. We did that with one so-called implant that was up on your website about a year ago, two years ago.
That was from John Mack.
Oh, okay. I guess it was about 2 years ago.
That's right.
In that case, it was not alien in nature. If you remember, I explained that as a little girl, the subject had fallen down and actually inhaled a feather, a bird feather, and it worked its way up into her sinus cavity. And
wow.
Did I explain that to you?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
But
I'm not surprised you used it as a target.
Yeah, it was a very interesting target.
And, all right.
These would be good training targets, too.
Could you ask Major Dames if he and or his associates have done any remote viewing on the subject of God?
Yes, we have, including just for fun, the origin of God, those kinds of things. Carl Jung, those individuals who have the origin of God, those kinds of things. Carl Jung, the famous psychologist in the 20th century, he thought that he studied the language of the unconscious. What technical remote viewing is the alphabet of the unconscious.
Hmm.
And when we're looking at something that is topical in nature, like the idea of God, we can only download, sketch, and describe in terms of words, ideas. And in this case, we're looking at something we call the collective unconscious, the place where we download our ideas, the matrix. That's our term in our vernacular. The matrix may be, for lack of a better theory, working theory, the mind of God. So if you're remote viewing God, you know, you can imagine the kinds of ideas that you get when you do that.
Barely.
And that what happens is that in those cases, you have different symbols for different people. It's viewer dependent. If we were remote viewing, let's say, one of the photos on your website of an implant, any trained remote viewer would come up with the same data. If they were stayed in the rigor, the technical remote viewing rigor, if they went right through the protocols, we would all, as trained remote viewers, come up with the same data. It would be consistent. But were you and I to remote view God, our data in some cases may be different depending upon our personal symbology.
Makes sense. Ed, if there are multiple dimensions, as we seem to be on the verge of proving, how can you be sure that what you remote view is in fact occurring in the dimension that we seem to be in now? I know it's a complicated issue, but I would enjoy an explanation. That's from Kevin in San Diego.
I don't have an explanation. The only statement I could make is that this tool was developed, had its genesis as a military intelligence collection tool, and that's what it supported. It supported we're material guys, and it supported a material physical world, operations in the material physical world. How I relate to that world and other aspects of myself as I exist in other trans-dimensional states or trans-psychological states,
right.
I'm not generally concerned about. Maybe I will be when my physical body is dead. Sure, I will be, but at this juncture, I'm just concerned with a physical, material world, and this tool, technical remote viewing, supports a knowledge collection and working in that material world very effectively. And that's all I can say about it.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Oh, yes. Good morning. This is Trish calling from Western New York.
Hi, Trish.
Hi. Listen, it was so ironic that I was trying to bring some closure to some what sounds like a remote viewing that I experienced back in 1989, and it's not a day that has gone by that I don't think about what I encountered. When you talk about remote viewing and remote, thinking in reference to spiritual guidance, and that's where I got my strength, and if it wasn't for the grace of God, I don't think I would have my right mind today. I tuned into the show about 2:30, and I caught the topic in reference to backpack nukes.
Yes. Okay?
And that was so strange because of where I lived in downstate New York. I lived off Hobson Mountain Road and the Taconic State Parkway. I experienced unbelievable. it was just a nightmare people thought that because I was working so much overtime that I was just, you know, losing it. But then after having someone in my house experience something, and it brought on the whole trooper, I'm a correction officer, it brought on the whole gang of guys to come to my house and basically try to, catch whomever it was, which we thought was harassing me. And they never did. And I mean, the things with the lights, the glow, even during the day when I would sit out, you know, just to get, and I had never been so in tone with my life, my mind, my body, and they close everything out and just try to be in tune with what was going on. And they tuned down to nature. It was so deep, you know, and things I would see, different.
All right, well, it's very difficult to tell whether you actually had a remote viewing experience or not, but I recall from asking Ed in the past that a lot of remote viewers have lost it. A lot of the remote viewers, in fact, who were in the military program, didn't make it, did they, Ed?
Well, let me say a few things. First of all, remote viewing is not an experience. Remote viewing has turned into a buzzword now since I took it public in 1989 and 1990, when I came out of the cold, so to speak. So it's been turned into a buzzword for all psychic experiences, but it's a skill. This is taught as a skill, and I mean, and it takes a lot of hard work and a commitment to learning it as a skill, just like ice skating or skiing or anything else.
It's not something that just happens to you one day.
No, you got to work at it from the ground floor up. It's an adventure, and it's a lot of fun, but you still have to do the work, just like learning how to paint or anything else. But it is the syntax and the grammar, learning the syntax and the grammar, so to speak, for the way that the unconscious mind communicates information accurately to conscious awareness.
All right, but
all the rest is explained in the tape.
Yes, but there are pitfalls, and there are remote viewers who didn't make it. What happened to them?
If someone is not balanced, if they're not psychologically balanced when they learn this, sometimes it throws them over the edge because of the profundity of the information that they're getting. Let me give you a small example.
Sure.
I was affected greatly when I remote viewed the JFK assassination. I was not prepared to believe that there was a conspiracy. I flat out disbelieved it.
Right.
But my data was showing that a flechette was fired from inside the car. So that was sort of a profound experience for me. For other people, finding that investigating mysteries or enigma, for instance, that the universe may not be the way they thought it had been their whole lives, can pull the anchor from out of their reality, can pull the ground right out from underneath them, and they no longer have anything to grab onto. Their paradigm has just went out the window. That may have a profound effect on people.
How many remote viewers ended up mentally disturbed to the degree they couldn't function?
The only one that I can think of on the military team was was Morehouse. David Morehouse went over the edge, and he was committed to he admitted himself into a mental hospital, but that was generally to escape. He used the excuse of going crazy to escape some more severe charges.
What about your course? Now, you are initiating people into exactly the same world. So obviously then there are concerns. What do you tell people about that as they take your tapes and go and begin?
I have no caveats for them. I don't. It's just like opening a book and a book of mysteries. And in this case, though, it's a skill. It is a skill, and what you do with that skill is up to you. For instance, I have never remote viewed my own death, and I don't think I want to. It's not that I'm afraid of remote viewing my death. It's just something I don't want to know. But if an individual were to decide to do that, or to give that target, remember, these targets are done many times in the blind. You're taught to remote view without knowledge of the target. In other words, when you begin this process, you're only remote viewing a number that is a random number that's connected with a target. That's how you're taught to do this. Your conscious mind is taught to stay out of the way. So if you were to give, let's say, Art Bell death, that event, Art Bell's death,
right,
you were to give that target as a number, and you would associate a random number with that, and give that random number to a trained remote viewer, they would describe your death. Okay?
I'm like you.
In a probabilistic future.
No, thank you.
And you may not want to have that, because that may profoundly affect you. And that's what I mean about some remote viewers being affected. Others were not trainable, because I had to fire them, because they could not attend to the rigor of the course. They wanted to do it their way. And there's no other way right now. There's only one way. That's the military way. And that's what you're learning when you buy these tapes, the military way.
All right. How inevitable is it? Let's say that somebody remote views Art Bell's death, and it turns out that I step in front of an 18-wheeler winging its way down the highway and get smushed.
Mm-hmm.
Could I avoid that?
Yes. Yes, it appears that you can. It appears that you do have a certain latitude at that juncture. Just you could choose not to participate in that particular event, but you'd have to have the knowledge first. Otherwise, it becomes very likely that that's the way you'll go. This we found in our experience as remote viewers, well, time and time again.
Okay, then. Doesn't that make the viewing of one's death something worth doing?
Perhaps. There's only a certain amount of latitude there, however. I think a better cue, a better way to search one's future would be to look at what we call an optimum trajectory, at sort of like the divine will type of idea. How an optimum trajectory, where you take your name and you use that search term, an encyclopedic search term, optimum trajectory, that puts you on a course of action that usually extends your life quite a bit. Sometimes the data that's downloaded from something like that is really simple. Stop smoking, or, you know, disengage from the work that you're doing or something like that. Go to the doctor if you have a psychological problem. You start sketching the room of a psychiatrist that you know, and that's the answer to that question. Very simple. In other cases, it's more complex.
So this is a useful medical diagnostic tool.
Extremely useful medical diagnostic tool. If you look at our website, you'll see an example where we saved an individual's life by a very common example, where a neurosurgeon had an intractable problem, and I remote viewed the source of the problem, and indeed that was the source. That's a very common remote viewing target.
All right. Wild card line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
How you doing there, Art?
Okay, where are you?
I'm over in Logandale, Nevada. I'm thankful I got through, and in the course of waiting to get on the air, I came up with a second question and a comment.
All right.
So I got a question, comment, and then another question. I was curious as to why you're getting... Well, first I want to say, this is your last interview, is it not? Mr.
Well, I'm going to hope not. Ed has said that this interview that we're now doing would be the last.
Okay.
But I have a feeling that we're going to be in contact from where he is going.
Okay. And I forgot the comment, but I'll just ask him the second question. I was curious as to why your guest seems to remote view things that are describing the official size and general shape, but never describes a more important interconnected detail, such as, for instance, the propulsion systems inside UFOs that are seen and reported right here in the contiguous USA.
Okay, careful about propulsion systems, because propulsion, sometimes we've attempted to, I had a team of some of the best scientists in the United States, from Stanford Linear Accelerator, from institutes that some of the best scientists in this country in the desert looking at ground truth, vehicles that we were watching come and go night after night, and we were attempting to discern the propulsion systems, and they were beyond our ken. In other cases, we were not looking at a vehicle. When we remote viewed it, it wasn't a vehicle at all. It was an opening, what one might call a dimensional opening, or the other end of a portal, through which something was looking at us, and it appeared to be visually a vehicle. So that wasn't a propulsion, had nothing to do with the propulsion system at all, because it was a false premise that that was the vehicle. So we have to be very careful.
All right. He did ask a rather relevant question at the beginning. You said this might be our last interview. Now, I know you're going to Polynesia. You finally told us all that. I presume in Polynesia you will have access to a telephone, the internet, and so forth and so on. What would preclude any future interviews?
My operational base, my forward base, is in the Hawaiian Islands. That is where I'm operating from. And there is indeed access, of course, to internet and to phone lines there. The place where Starman, where my operational site is, that has no access to anything like that. If I'm at my control base, the forward command post, so to speak, then there's no problem doing follow-ups. When I turn in our report to you on the dolphin pods beaching themselves and the Mexico UFO, that will either be fax or phone call, depending on where we are. You'll get the information, but I'm not sure whether it'll be in an interview form or fax form.
All right. Good enough, Ed. Stay right where you are. We'll be right back. Ed Dames is my guest, Major Ed Dames, SciTech's Ed Dames. Roger Lear and Daryl Sims, who's going to be on the program again tomorrow night, with electron scanning microscope photographs of implants, apparent alien implants taken out, surgically removed from human beings. And we've got those photographs on the website. I take it they would make a decent target.
They would. They're very specific. They're unequivocal. There is a photograph. That's the target. Describe it and backtrack it through time and look at its origin. We did that with one so-called implant that was up on your website about a year ago.
That was
2 years ago.
That was from John Mack.
Oh, okay. I guess that was about 2 years ago.
That's right.
That in that case it was not alien in nature. Do you remember I explained that as a little girl, the subject had fallen down and actually inhaled a feather, a bird feather, and it worked its way up into her sinus cavity. And
wow.
Did I explain that to you?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
But
I'm not surprised you used it as a target.
Yeah, it was a very interesting target.
All right.
These would be good training targets, too.
Could you ask Major Dames if he and or his associates have done any remote viewing on the subject of God?
Yes, we have, including just for fun, the origin of God, those kinds of things. Carl Jung, those individuals who have studied Carl Jung, the famous psychologist in the 20th century, he thought that he studied the language of the unconscious. What technical remote viewing is the alphabet of the unconscious.
Hmm.
And when we're looking at something that is topical in nature, like the idea of God, we can only download, sketch, and describe in terms of words, ideas. And in this case, we're looking at something we call the collective unconscious, the place where we download our ideas, the matrix. That's our term in our vernacular. The matrix may be, for lack of a better theory, working theory, the mind of God. So if you're remote viewing God, you know, you can imagine the kinds of ideas that you get when you do that.
Barely.
And that what happens is that in those cases, you have different symbols for different people. It's viewer dependent. If we were remote viewing, let's say, one of the photos on your website of an implant, any trained remote viewer would come up with the same data. If they were stayed in the rigor, the technical remote viewing rigor, if they went right through the protocols, we would all, as trained remote viewers, come up with the same data. It would be consistent. But were you and I to remote view God, our data in some cases may be different depending upon our personal symbology.
Makes sense. Ed, if there are multiple dimensions, as we seem to be on the verge of proving, how can you be sure that what you remote view is in fact occurring in the dimension that we seem to be in now? I know it's a complicated issue, but I would enjoy an explanation. That's from Kevin in San Diego.
I don't have an explanation. The only statement I could make is that this tool was developed, had its genesis as a military intelligence collection tool, and that's what it supported. It supported We're material guys, and it's supported a material physical world, operations in the material physical world. How I relate to that world and other aspects of myself, as I exist in other trans-dimensional states or trans-psychological states,
right.
I'm not generally concerned about. Maybe I will be when my physical body is dead, Sure, I will be. But at this juncture, I'm just concerned with the physical, material world. And this tool, technical remote viewing, supports knowledge collection and working in that material world very effectively. And that's all I can say about it.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Oh, yes. Good morning. This is Trish calling from Western New York.
Hi, Trish.
Hi. Listen, it was so ironic that I was trying to bring some closure to some what sounds like a remote viewing that I experienced back in 1989, and it's not a day that has gone by that I don't think about what I encountered. When you talk about remote viewing and remote, thinking in reference to spiritual guidance, and that's where I got my strength, and if it wasn't for the grace of God, I don't think I would have my right mind today. And I tuned into the show about 2:30, and I caught the topic in reference to backpack nukes.
Yes.
And that was so strange because of where I lived in downstate New York. I lived off Hoston Mountain Road and the Taconic State Parkway. I experienced what unbelievable. It was just a nightmare where people thought that because I was working so much overtime that I was just, you know, losing it. But then after having someone in my house experience something, and it brought on the whole troop of, I'm a correction officer, it brought on the whole gang of guys to come to my house and basically try to, catch whomever it was, which we thought was harassing me. And they never did. And I mean, the things with the lights, the glow, even during the day when I would sit out, you know, just to get in, I had never been so in tone with my life, my mind, my body, and close everything out and just try to be in tune with what was going on. And they tuned down to nature. It was so deep, you know, and things I would see, different.
All right, well, it's very difficult to tell whether you actually had a remote viewing experience or not, but. I recall from asking Ed in the past that a lot of remote viewers have lost it. A lot of the remote viewers, in fact, who were in the military program, didn't make it, did they, Ed?
Well, let me say a few things. First of all, remote viewing is not an experience. Remote viewing has turned into a buzzword now since I took it public in 1989 and 1990. When I came out of the cold, so to speak. So it turned into a buzzword for all psychic experiences, but it's a skill. This is taught as a skill, and it takes a lot of hard work and a commitment to learning it as a skill. It's like ice skating or skiing or anything else.
It's not something that just happens to you one day.
No, you got to work at it from the ground floor up. It's an adventure and it's a lot of fun, but you still have to do the work, just like learning how to paint or anything else. But it is the syntax and the grammar, learning the syntax and the grammar, so to speak, for the way that the unconscious mind communicates information accurately to conscious awareness.
All right,
but all the rest is explained in the tape.
Yes, but there are pitfalls, and there are remote viewers who didn't make it. What happened to them?
If someone is not balanced, if they're not psychologically balanced when they learn this, sometimes it throws them over the edge because of the profundity of the information that they're getting. Let me give you a small example.
Sure.
I was affected greatly when I remote viewed the JFK assassination. I was not prepared to believe that there was a conspiracy. I flat out disbelieved it.
Right.
But my data was showing that a flechette was fired from inside the car. So that was sort of a profound experience for me. For other people, finding that, investigating mysteries or enigma, for instance, that the universe may not be the way they thought it had been their whole lives, can pull the anchor from out of their reality, can pull the ground right out from underneath them, and they no longer have anything to grab onto. Their paradigm has just went out the window. That may have a profound effect on people.
How many remote viewers ended up mentally disturbed? To the degree they couldn't function.
The only one that I can think of on the military team was was Morehouse, David Morehouse. David Morehouse went over the edge, and he was committed to. He admitted himself into a mental hospital, but that was generally to escape. He used the excuse of going crazy to escape some more severe charges.
What about? Your course, now you are initiating people into exactly the same world. So obviously, then, there are concerns. What do you tell people about that as they take your tapes and go and begin?
I have no caveats for them. I don't. It's just like opening a book and a book of mysteries. And in this case, though, it's a skill. It's a skill, and what you do with that skill is up to you. For instance, I have never remote viewed my own death, and I don't think I want to. It's not that I'm afraid of remote viewing my death. It's just something I don't want to know. But if an individual were to decide to do that or to give that target, remember, these targets are done many times in the blind. You're taught to remote view without knowledge of the target. In other words, when you begin this process, you're only remote viewing a number that is a random number that's connected with a target. That's how you're taught to do this. Your conscious mind is taught to stay out of the way. So if you were to give, let's say, Art Bell death, that event, Art Bell's death,
right,
you were to give that target as a and you would associate a random number with that and give that random number to a trained remote viewer, they would describe your death. Okay?
Unlike you.
In a probabilistic future.
No, thank you.
And you may not want to have that, because
no.
that may profoundly affect you. And that's what I mean about some remote viewers being affected. Others were not trainable, because I had to fire them, because they could not attend to the rigor of the course. They wanted to do it their way. And there's no other way right now. There's only one way. That's the military way. And that's what you're learning when you buy these tapes, the military way.
All right. How inevitable is it? Let's say that somebody remote views Art Bell's death, and it turns out that I step in front of an 18-wheeler winging its way down the highway and get smushed.
Mm-hmm.
Could I avoid that?
Yes. Yes, it appears that you can. It appears that you do have a certain latitude at that juncture. Just you could choose not to participate in that particular event, but you'd have to have the knowledge first. Otherwise, it becomes very likely that that's the way you'll go. This we found in our experience as remote viewers,
well,
time and time again.
Okay, then. Doesn't that make the viewing of one's death something worth doing?
Perhaps. There's only a certain amount of latitude there. However, I think a better cue, a better way to search one's future would be to look at what we call an optimum trajectory, at sort of like the divine will type of idea. How an optimum trajectory, where you take your name and you use that search term, an encyclopedic search term, optimum trajectory, that puts you on a course of action that usually extends your life quite a bit. Sometimes the data that's downloaded from something like that is really simple. Stop smoking, or, you know, disengage from the work that you're doing or something like that. Go to the doctor if you have a psychological problem. You start sketching the room of a psychiatrist that you know, and that's the answer to that question. Very simple. In other cases, it's more complex.
So this is a useful medical diagnostic tool.
Extremely useful medical diagnostic tool. If you look at our website, you'll see an example where we saved an individual's life by a very common example, where a neurosurgeon had an intractable problem, and I remote viewed the source of the problem. And indeed, that was the source. That's a very common remote viewing target.
All right. Wild card line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
How you doing there, Art?
Okay, where are you?
I'm over in Logandale, Nevada. I'm thankful I got through, and in the course of waiting to get on the air, I came up with a second question and a comment.
All right.
So I got a question, comment, and then another question. I was curious as to why you're getting... Well, first I want to say, this is your last interview, is it not? Mr.
Well, I'm going to hope not. Ed has said that this interview that we're now doing would be the last.
Okay.
But I have a feeling that we're going to be in contact from where he is going.
Okay. And I forgot the comment, but I'll just ask him the second question. I was curious as to why your guest seems to remote view things that are describing the official size and general shape, but never describes a more important interconnected detail, such as...
for instance, the propulsion systems inside UFOs that are seen and reported right here in the contiguous USA.
Okay, careful about propulsion systems, because propulsion, sometimes we've attempted, I had a team of some of the best scientists in the United States, from Stanford Linear Accelerator, from institutes, some of the best scientists in this country in the desert looking at ground truth, at vehicles that we were watching come and go night after night, and we were attempting to discern the propulsion systems, and they were beyond our ken. In other cases, we were not looking at a vehicle. When we remote viewed it, it wasn't a vehicle at all. It was an opening, what one might call a dimensional opening, or the other end of a portal, through which something was looking at us, and it appeared to be visually a vehicle. So that was... It was an opening, what one might call a dimensional opening, or the other end of a portal, through which something was looking at us, and it appeared to be visually a vehicle. So that wasn't a propulsion, had nothing to do with the propulsion system at all, because it was a false premise that that was the vehicle. So we have to be very careful.
All right. He did ask a rather relevant question at the beginning. You said this might be our last interview. Now, I know you're going to Polynesia. You finally told us all that. I presume in Polynesia you will have access to a telephone, the internet, and so forth and so on. What would preclude any future interviews?
My operational base, my forward base, is in the Hawaiian Islands. That is where I'm operating from. And there is indeed access, of course, to internet and to phone lines there. The place where Starman, where my operational site is that has no access to anything like that. If I'm at my control base, the forward command post, so to speak, then there's no problem doing follow-ups. When I turn in our report to you on the dolphin pods beaching themselves and the Mexico UFO, that will either be fax or phone call, depending on where we are. You'll get the information, but I'm not sure whether it'll be in interview form or fax form.
All right, good enough.
With your audience and with you.
Good, thank you. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, my name is Omar and I'm calling from Wyoming.
Yes, sir.
I have a couple of questions for the Major. First, a couple of friends have told me about your program, Art, and it's been about 3 months now, and it has been really a pleasure. I've learned a lot of things from your program.
Thank you.
Anyways, the first question is, what's the Major's view concerning AIDS? And the second thing, I'm from the Middle East, and I would like to know what's his view concerning the Middle East as far as the peace process. And
all right, both very good questions. First, let's tackle AIDS. Major, man-made, what do you know about AIDS? It's a likely target.
There was a contract that my company floated years ago, and in that contract we did some exploratory work on the origin of AIDS.
Right.
It is not man-made. It actually was a simian virus, and researchers are now realizing that it was in the simian community, the monkey community. But what we did was look at the origin of the AIDS virus. Now remember, when, as remote viewers, if we target AIDS, we're targeting the disease, an epidemiological thing,
right,
a topic.
Right.
So we look at the origin of AIDS. What we sketch and describe are young people in a dance hall in Africa, that type of thing, or in Haiti. But if we look at the AIDS virus, the origin of the AIDS virus, then we're back very long ago into a cave where a man is sleeping with a dog, and we're sketching the underbelly of a dog. And what we find is that AIDS originated as a canine virus, jumped ship, and mutated, jumped ship into the simian community, then eventually into Homo sapiens.
Wow.
Okay. Why is that important? That's important because there may be an Achilles heel inside that virus. That, and for instance, I'm just throwing out hypothetical ideas. If one were to use, let's say, a canine antisera or something that was used for distemper, there may be something at the molecular action site that would find this weak point in this juggernaut called the AIDS virus and go in and attack it because it has an ancient Achilles heel hidden deep in there, a genetic legacy from when it was a canine virus.
Maybe some researcher is listening and will take that from...
But we can go the other route too. We can look at a cure for AIDS and that's not that difficult either. When we do that, we can come up with an ensemble of different things than we have. We know that it eventually will be cured, and we can look at both the components of the, let's call it a vaccine for right now. If we do a pie chart with the major components in this vaccine, it's a lot of work for remote viewers to go in and look at each of the components. Perhaps we have a mold on a jungle floor somewhere as one component, something in the mold. Then we might have a little bit of water. We might have a little bit of benzene. Who knows? That's a lot of work to come up with what in the end will be a cure for AIDS.
All right. The Middle East peace process, the PLO, the Israelis.
Forget it. We're going to war.
Yeah.
Just forget it. There's no peace. The peace process was great. We have to thank all of those very hardworking, devoted statesmen, statespersons who worked so hard and so long, gave their lives to try to attain peace, and probably held off war for as long as they could. But it's over. It's we're going to war.
First time caller line. You're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm calling from Minneapolis.
Yes, sir.
Actually, I have a question, but I was wondering, your guest was talking about a will, not a transcendent will. He used some other name, but that's not my question. I was just wondering if I could, recall what he said. But my question is, what are Major's thoughts on the fact that a mind is a physical entity in a person's brain?
I don't consider that a fact. I consider a mind separate from a brain. Most physicians, most doctors, interestingly, in the medical community, consider the brain and the mind as coincident. I do not.
And you don't?
No. I consider the mind to be a field. A separate, actually a field effect, and the brain to be...
coincident with a soul?
No, absolutely not. Soul as a separate entity, let's call it one's personal essence, one's key essence is as the soul. Mind is a separate entity. Brain and the body is another entity. All discrete.
Comforting somehow. Wild card line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Yes, I have a two-part question from Major Dames.
Sure.
First of all, has he ever remote viewed what you would call the wherever we were before we were in our bodies here, the soul, so to speak, the pre-existence? And if so, if you witnessed anything like a staging area where we were maybe tested and... possibly had a hand in, the way we were actually going to look. And
are you asking, for example, whether he has remote viewed what, for example, I was before I entered my body?
Right. What we were before.
Yeah. Okay.
We were here.
Ed.
This field is the current vernacular is called continuity of consciousness. What, assuming that we're still conscious. As entities, if we maintain our identity, what were we before coming in the physical body?
Yes.
And what will we be?
Yes.
My vice president in tape number 4 of module 2 has a lecture about why it's so difficult to discern that. And just to sum up, to paraphrase her, it goes like this. We have this physical bicameral brain now, this mind that associates itself with this physical reality that we have. The reality that we are before we come into existence in this body is so very different. The milieu is so very different than this physical milieu that we can't, there's no one-to-one correspondence.
No reference.
We don't have any common denominator to perceive that existence. So we can't translate that to this effectively. At least we can't using technical remote viewing.
Okay.
That's part of a theoretical lecture that we have in tape 4.
Continuity of consciousness. Very interesting. Caller?
What about something like it just before we were, say, transferred into our bodies?
Well,
we can sketch certain, we can use our bodies and our minds and sketch ideas, but we can't discern any other ideas associated with that act. What is happening, where it's happening, because there is no where. A technical remote viewing lends itself really to the physical world, to solving problems in the physical world. Those kinds of things remain to us mysteries, and it's one of the few areas, the very few I found, that we can't effectively tackle using TRV.
I'm not surprised. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Who wants to know everything anyway?
That's right. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, sir, you're on the air. Where are you?
Crown Point, New York.
Okay.
Good morning, Art, Ed.
Hi.
My question is, I've just become kind of well-heeled through an inheritance. And it's in blue chip stock, and I've been seriously considering, you know, way before, about not leaving my money in the stock market and getting it out, and pretty much taking the rest of the year off, excuse me, and really enjoying myself, doing the things that I've been wanting to do the last few years, and that's basically it.
Well, boy, that's good advice for anybody. Ed, if you were to advise somebody like that who's got money in stocks, based on what you know and what you know is coming, what would you say to them?
Put it in physical gold.
Gold?
Yeah. Not stocks, but the physical gold.
Again, based on your prediction of economic collapse coming in, what, 98?
This year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. First time caller line, you're on the air with Ed Dames. Good morning.
Good morning.
Turn your radio off, please.
Yes, that's all I did.
Good.
First time I called you, I really appreciate your show.
Thank you. Where are you, by the way?
Tennessee.
All right.
Listen to you out of WTN out of Nashville.
The big one, yes, sir.
Yeah, it's a friend of mine turned me on to your show. I've been listening to the Major, and I realized just from listening to him speak that he's very intelligent and probably trained. I would like to ask three questions. One is, where did you receive your education prior to your military interface? Excuse me. Number two, in remote viewing, how do you deal with your own ego? And number three, where did you get your remote view about AIDS? I know for a fact, having been in the military, that it was created in Fort Detrick, Maryland in 1972.
Well, now, hold on. We know that there were inquiries about whether something like AIDS could be created, but we now have information that AIDS has been isolated, for example, as early as 1955. So,
yeah, it was not a man-made disease.
Right.
I know the conspiracy theorists want to believe that, but it was not.
Let's go back to the first questions. Your education prior to the military?
University of California, Berkeley. I was a distinguished military graduate at Berkeley's ROTC program, and I majored in Chinese and biophysics. I speak fluent Chinese. Ego.
Yeah,
ego has cost me more problems in my life than any other single aspect of my physical existence. I continue to this day to make serious judgment calls, and I'm not kidding. It
That is why remote viewing, it grows in importance to me, because when I remote view, the data is 100% trustworthy. And but if I try to second guess or suss out, for instance, if I were to try to assess someone that I meet on the street, their personality, I am always wrong. Every single time. If I remote view them, I can nail down every aspect of them and where they're coming from, the most significant events in their life, their modus operandi, and get it right. But I just can't. I have not been able to effectively, outside of facts, scientific facts, I have not been able to effectively suss out the rest of life. So my mind and my ego fail me. They get in the way. That's why remote viewing is so important to me.
Yeah, I understand that. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Yes, hi, Art.
Where are you?
I'm calling. This is Dave. I'm calling from Northeast Kansas.
Okay, Dave.
And I got a question for you. Being one of the many blue-collar listeners of your show, it kind of worries me that there, unless I want to go to Liechtenstein or East British Columbia or Northern Montana, there seem to be no other
safe
havens. I would think that surely in the entire North American continent, there should be a few other hidey holes.
I would agree. That's only based upon, I'd say, nominally, 20 remote viewers through a commercial course, remote viewing pockets, sanctuaries, using that search term. How many there are, who knows, but I would be awful surprised if there were only three or four.
Do you locate safe areas by noting where people seem to be alive past a certain point? Or
No. We use their names and the idea of sanctuary as a search term, and then we describe the location, and then we analyze the data and fit it. We analyze the data, pattern analysis, and determine where geographically we are, and that's how we find these places.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, this is Jim in Virginia.
Hello, Jim.
Thanks, Art, for your show. You got a wonderful show. I've been listening to you for a few months now.
Thank you.
I know we're getting close to the top of the hour. Major Dames, is the reason President Clinton will not fill out here the remainder of his term the same reason millions are going to suffer in D.C.? And I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
All right. Interesting question. I doubt you're going to get an answer.
I don't know if millions are going to suffer in D.C. I hope not, because I have two young sons there who live there. And yes, I'm pulling them out prior to the beginning of 1999 to take them with me, but they're there right now. So obviously, it's not something that's going to happen. It's not going to happen this year to massive numbers of people in D.C. I am not at liberty to say why the President of the United States is not going to finish this term.
All right.
I cannot do it.
I understand. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning. Where are you?
Wichita, Kansas.
All right.
KFH.
The Heartland.
Yes, sir. Major Ed Dames, I wish you don't do incommunicado on us, because you're the number one guest as far as I'm concerned. I had a question about what do you say to those people that say that they just like to quit their job and take their money and, I guess, go to town, you know, or go wild, that kind of stuff. If everything is going to go to hell in a hat basket, then what do you advise people to do as far as just, you know, sticking with their daily life?
Hook up with like-minded people, because that's the only way that life is going to be tolerable if anybody survives, is to hook up with like-minded people and work with them. Just communities, small communities. That's my best advice.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Where are you, please?
Hi, this is John in Philadelphia.
Yes, John.
I have a question. I'm blind. Does remote viewing involve actual sight?
No, it doesn't, but the tapes will require some, in the first tape, tape number one, you'll need somebody to hold your hand with your pen in your hand for that first tape, so that they can show you how to produce certain lines on a piece of paper. Once that process is mastered, which should take you about 3 or 4 hours, you can go there. You won't need sight, but you will need someone to help you do that.
So I've only been blind about a year and a half, so I didn't know how to write.
Yeah, you'll have no problem, but you just need somebody to, because I demonstrate in the tape some marks on the paper that your autonomic nervous system produces in response to certain things. I don't want to get technical here. You'll need someone to help you there. That's all.
Would the sightless person actually visualize what they're transferring to paper?
Yes, in a way they would. Mm-hmm. Particularly someone who has not been congenitally blind. For people who have been blind since birth, will not be able to do that. They'll have the ideas will be transferable in terms of words, but the sketches will have to be, because their thesaurus is limited in terms of experiencing the three-dimensional world, someone else will have to interpret their sketches.
So it is going to be difficult, but possible.
For someone who's been who's congenitally blind, it is a much more difficult task.
Well, I really hate last show, so I'm going to hope this is not a last program. I mean, I know where you're going, and I know that you can get to a telephone occasionally.
Our forward tactical command post, yes, but you don't know where we're going in terms of digging in.
Only vaguely, that's right. That's exactly right. Well, I will hope there will be yet another program ahead of us, even if it's from Polynesia. And I know that you're going to continue to have internet access and all the rest.
I have to train on the internet. In fact, I'll be in our chat room for a little while after the show.
Will you?
Yes, and that's at our website address.
All right. That website, of course, is available through mine. Or what is the web address, Ed?
www.trv-psitech.com.
That's PSI?
Yes. SciTech.
SciTech. All right, my friend. It has been a pleasure, and I can say only I hope we will do it again. And enjoy the islands, Ed.
I'll be in touch, Art.
Take care.
Okay, it's been a pleasure.
Take care. That's Ed Dames, folks. That's it. From the high desert, which we'll answer when we get the question, this has been Coast to Coast AM.